historicengland.org.uk/disability history.
For historical accuracy, this research has used language in the context of the time period being explored. Words used to describe different types of disability at different times can sound offensive to modern ears. During this recording, we'll explain the definitions of these words as used at the time.
Disability from 1485 to 1660. This section tells you how great changes in 16th century English society had a lasting effect on the lives of people with disabilities. The destruction of religious hospitals. When Henry VIII split from the Roman Church, he ordered the dissolution of the monasteries. Across the country, religious houses were demolished and monks and nuns driven out. The hospitals in these buildings were lost, along with the systems of care they had provided for sick and disabled people. For many, poverty and a life on the streets followed this destruction. A petition to King Henry in 1538 called for the refoundation of the hospitals that had been closed down. It complained of the miserable people lying in the street, offending every clean person passing by the way. But very little new building took place over the next 30 years.
Dissolution of the monasteries. The period largely between 1533 and 1545, when England under Henry VIII broke with the church in Rome, and dissolved, or plundered, and shut down many religious buildings, including those which cared for the sick and the disabled.
Social duty. Gradually, caring for disabled people became a civic duty, not just a religious matter. Rich benefactors still funded buildings for the disabled, but it was to enhance their reputation, not to save their souls. In London, new hospitals were built and some old ones were refounded. These were increasingly public buildings, funded by parish collections, taxes and donations. By the end of the 16th century, new almshouses and hospitals were springing up.
Almshouses, sometimes known as maisons d'aillus, were homes built from the medieval period onwards to shelter elderly, disabled or other people considered unable to look after themselves.
Laws and social attitudes. A series of poor law acts viciously punished sturdy vagabonds who were seen as idle by choice. They could be whipped and branded. But the impotent poor were viewed differently. The person naturally disabled, either in wit or member, as an idiot, lunatic, blind, lame, etc., not being able to work, all these are to be provided for by the overseers of necessary relief and are to have allowances, according to their maladies and needs.
Poor law. Legislation designed to define English society's obligations and duties to the destitute, aged, sick or disabled judged unable to look after themselves. Also contained punitive measures aimed at able-bodied poor people deemed idle or unwilling to work. Began with a 1531 law under Henry VIII and culminated in the Poor Law Amendment Act of 1834. Sturdy vagabonds refers to a beggar who has no disability or sickness preventing them from working. Impotent in its early English sense referred to people considered unable to look after themselves for reasons of age, infirmity, or disability. The impotent poor were distinguished from the able-bodied poor in poor law legislation. Lame was an early English term meaning restricted use of one or more limbs. Applied to restricted use of arms as well as legs.
The natural fools at court. Life was very different for some. A few people we would recognize today as having learning disabilities enjoyed a privileged life at court, with a keeper who looked after them. These natural fools were seen as an important source of wisdom and humor. They provided a welcome contrast to the plotting and treachery at court. The natural fool, Will Sommer and Jane the Fool, can be seen in paintings of the royal family from this period.
In the 16th and 17th centuries, the term keeper referred to any male carer and did not imply any qualification. The term natural fool was used from the medieval period until its usage died out in the 18th century to describe a person born with a lifelong mental impairment. Used to make a distinction from lunatics, who were seen as suffering a temporary impairment due to mental illness. Also distinguished from artificial fool, someone pretending to be a fool, such as a court jester.
Medical treatment for mental illness. The small Bethlehem Hospital was the only institution for mentally ill people to survive. In 1547, its control passed to the Corporation of London and its first medically qualified superintendent was employed. The hospital suffered financial abuse and neglect for many years, but attitudes were changing and mental illness was increasingly seen as a matter for medical treatment.
More information about the hospital can be found on Heritage Gateway at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.aspx?mark UID=E21F2B9-E61D-48C-A9AE-8946939D5F& resource ID=1911. More information about the Corporation of London can be found on Heritage Gateway at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.aspx?mark UID=C94D38D-176D-4FC1-986E-976C6AC64825 ampersand resource ID=1911.
Care in the community. Life could be very hard for disabled people, but they were not isolated. Most mentally ill people lived in their communities, treated with religious, psychological, astrological, and traditional remedies. Other disabled people married and had families and worked, unless their disabilities were too extensive. In 1570, a 70-year-old blind baker was still hard at work in Norwich, helped by his wife. Disability in the Tudor institutions. This section explains that many of the religious institutions caring for the sick and disabled at the start of the Tudor period were destroyed in Henry VIII's dissolution of the monasteries and eventually replaced by civic hospitals. The religious institutions. In 1485, at the beginning of the Tudor period, institutional care of disabled people was still largely in the spittles, hospitals, and almshouses run by orders of monks and nuns. Some were well managed and honestly administered, but concerns were growing about neglect, abuse, corruption, and building decay. "I hear that the masters of your hospitals be so fat that the poor be kept lean and bare enough," wrote one critic.
Almshouses, sometimes known as maisons d'aïeul, were homes built from the medieval period onwards to shelter elderly, disabled, or other people considered unable to look after themselves.
Henry VIII's divorce. In 1533, the momentous event of Henry VIII's divorce caused the split from the Roman Catholic Church and the creation of the Church of England. This led to what's known as the dissolution of the monasteries. Over the next 12 years, the land, property, and assets of the old church were confiscated and many hospitals, being religious institutions, were plundered and dissolved. This was to have far-reaching implications for disabled people. Hospitals were caught up almost by accident in this campaign of destruction and looting against anything connected to the old religion. Henry and his ministers appear not to have foreseen that this would lead to destitution for many sick and disabled people.
Dissolution of the monasteries. The period largely between 1533 and 1545, when England under Henry VIII broke with the church in Rome and dissolved or plundered and shut down many religious buildings, including those which cared for the sick and the disabled.
The closing of the hospitals. Leading hospitals closed down, among them St. Leonard's in York, St. John Redcliffe in Bristol, Burton Lazars in Leicestershire, and in London, St. Giles Holborn and St. Bartholomew's. Bury St. Edmund's lost 5 hospitals, including its leper house. York lost 13. The Maison d'Aïeul, almshouse, in Dover, Kent, became an alehouse. As these institutions closed, those who lived in them were forced out. The king's attention was now drawn to those miserable creatures which do now daily die in the streets for lack of their due portion.
More information about St. Leonard's in York at https://historicengland.org.uk http://www.org.uk/listing/the-list/the-list/entry/125/7087. More information about Burton Lazars in Leicestershire at https://historicengland.org.uk/listing/the-list/the-list/entry/101-2242. More information about St. Bartholomew's at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.asp(x)?mark(UID) = 170542C-2B63-4 8CC(B320-0056AF8887-38. Ampersand resource ID equals 19191. More information about Maison Dieu in Dover at https://historicengland.org.uk/listing/the-list/the-list/entry/106943-1.
Public concern. The public reacted as the impotent poor fought to survive on the streets. People were afraid of the significant increase in sturdy vagabonds, but they also expressed concern for those who could not fend for themselves. The poor impotent creatures had some re-life of thyr scrapes, whereas no, they have not hinge. Then they had hospitals and almshouses to be lodged in, but no, they lie and starve in the streets. The new public hospitals. At last, Henry and his government were forced to act as a result of petitions by citizens. In London, St. Bartholomew's and St. Thomas's hospitals were reformed and passed to the control of the Corporation of London, along with the Royal Bethlehem Asylum. Two new hospitals opened: Christ's Hospital in Newgate Street, London, for orphan children, and Bridewell Palace for the correction of habitual idlers. Like other surviving hospitals and almshouses that passed to the control of civic authorities, these were public hospitals funded through donations, parish collections, and taxes on companies. Their job was to carry out public policy.
More information about Christ's Hospital in Newgate Street at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.asp(x)?mark(UID) = 8046 D6E-8CBB-4D73-9577-F93EEA4FB26 6 ampersand resource ID equals 19191. More information about Bridewell Palace at http://www.pastscape.org.uk/hob.asp(x)?mark(hob_ID) = 4049993.
After the dissolution. Gradually, after the upheaval of the dissolution, new almshouses and hospitals were built. John Port commissioned the Etwall Hospital in Derbyshire in 1557. Robert Dudley, Earl of Leicester, built a Maison Dieu in Warwick in 1571. In 1596, John Whitgift, Archbishop of Canterbury under Elizabeth I, founded the Hospital of the Holy Trinity in Croydon, London. Coningsby Hospital in Hereford was built in 1614 for 11 poor old servitors that have been soldiers, mariners, or serving men.
Asylum. Form of institution particularly for mentally ill or learning disabled people, which creates a fully segregated environment set apart from mainstream society. Began as charitable institutions in England in the late 18th century, built and provided by the state from 1815. More information about Etwall Hospital in Derbyshire at https://historicengland.org.uk/listing/the-list/the-list/entry/106567. More information about the Hospital of the Holy Trinity in Croydon at https://historicengland.org.uk/listing/the-list/list/entry/118-8846. More information about Coningsby Hospital in Hereford at https://historicengland.org.uk/listing/the-list/the-list-entry/119-6898.
The civic duty of care. Hospitals and almshouses had now become public institutions for those who could not look after themselves. Those who funded them were aiming to increase their public image rather than get to heaven more easily by doing good works. If disabled people were seen as needing support, public duty rather than religion was now the driving factor. The King's Fools: Disability in the Tudor Court. This section describes how natural fools, people with learning disabilities, were well cared for at the Tudor court and valued for their directness and humour, gaining a unique position in elite and royal society. Will Sommer. "As please your grace," said William Sommer, the king's fool to Henry VIII, "you have so many frauditers, so many conveyors, and so many deceivers to get up your money, that they get all to themselves." He should have said auditors, surveyors and receivers. With this joke, Will Sommer was telling his monarch that he was being defrauded and exploited by those around him. Sommer was free to voice such uncomfortable truths to Henry because he was his fool, and the king loved his humorous banter. Few others in the Tudor court would have dared to say such things. The natural fool. Will Sommer was well paid, well fed and well clothed in return for his work in Henry's court, but he did not lead the same life as other courtiers. In 1551, some years after Henry's death, a payment of 40 shillings was made to William Seyton, whom His Majesty hath appointed to keep William Sommer. Sommer needed a keeper, someone to look after and care for him, because people knew he could not care for himself. He was, in the language of the period, a natural fool, a person we would recognize today as having a learning disability. Sexton, a gift from Wolsey. Henry's previous fool Sexton, known by the nickname Patch, meaning fool, was also considered a natural who needed help and support in his life. When Cardinal Thomas Wolsey gave Hampton Court Palace, now in Greater London, to Henry VIII, he also gave him Sexton. Allegations of treason were being made against Wolsey, the Lord Chancellor, and he was desperately trying to win back Henry's favour.
More information about Hampton Court Palace at https://historicengland.org.uk/listing/the-list/the-list-entry/119-3127.
Sexton's life at court. We know that it took 6 tall yeomen to transport the clearly distressed Sexton to the court. A succession of keepers or carers were paid to look after him and given money for his needs, his food, laundry, shoes and posset ale. He didn't even have to buy his own clothes. However, as with the other natural fools in Henry's court, Sexton did not wear the harlequin's motley and cap with bells familiar to us from images of court jesters at the time. He wore high-quality cloth and silk doublets and coats, the clothes of a favoured retainer, servant. Jane the Fool. Another prominent natural fool of the 16th century was Jane the Fool. She seems to have been employed as the woman fool by Anne Boleyn, Henry's second queen, by Princess Mary, his daughter, and from 1544 by Catherine Parr, his sixth and last queen. Court records show that Jane was richly clothed at the court's expense, and that there were 8 payments of 4 pence a time for shaving of Jane, the fool's head. Part of the royal family. Paintings from this time show the prominent position that natural fools held in the royal family. A painting from 1545 shows Henry VIII with his ideal family, his long-dead favourite wife Jane Seymour, his son Edward and his daughters Mary and Elizabeth. Will Sommer and Jane the Fool appear on either side, flanking the family. Another intimate family portrait shows Sommer between Henry and his 3 children. The natural fool at court. These fascinating glimpses of a natural fools at the Tudor court show people with learning disabilities playing significant roles in the lives of the Tudor elite. Their perceived lack of guile, their directness and their humour were valued as assets and woven into the fabric of court life. Believed to be closer to God and closer to the truth than other people, the natural fools occupied a unique and valued position.
Acknowledgement. This section is based on the research of the historian Dr. Susanna Lipscomb, senior lecturer and convener for history at the New College of the Humanities, London, which she has kindly permitted Historic England to use. The research was commissioned by Historic Royal Palaces to support a live interpretation, event devised and performed by contemporary performers with learning difficulties from the Misfits Theatre Company in Bristol. It was conceived and directed by English Heritage National Jester Pete Cooper of Foolscap Productions. The event, and Dr. Lipscomb's research, is documented in words, picture and video on the All the King's Fools website at http://www.allthekingsfools.co.uk.
Mental illness in the 16th and 17th centuries. This section looks at how the appointment of the Bethlehem's first medical keeper in 1619 reflected society's growing view that mental illness was a medical matter rather than a supernatural event, despite the continued popularity of traditional treatments. The Bethlehem Asylum. When Henry VIII dissolved the religious orders, he seized the Bethlehem Hospital in London, England's only asylum for the mentally ill. However, shortly before he died in 1547, he transferred its control to the Corporation of London. It then became a civic rather than a religious institution. But the city aldermen struggled to keep it running, and in 1574, they handed its management to the Bridewell, a hospital for the idle poor. The Bethlehem at this time could only hold a maximum of 40 people and was often only half full. The new governors had a strict admission policy, taking in only those who were raving and furious and capable of cure, or if not yet are likely to do mischief to themselves or others.
More information about Bethlehem Hospital in London at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.asp(x?mark)uid=e211FTB9E61D48C-A9AE8908C0847939D5F& resource ID equals 19191. More information about Bridewell at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.asp(x?mark)uid=6A0DF25B-E0A05446B-A95-EDEF7A084D7E& resource ID=19191.
The Bethlehem's first medical keeper. In 1619, Helkiah Crook became the Bethlehem's first medically qualified keeper. He was a controversial character who had accused the previous keeper of irregularities and who was constantly at odds with the Royal College of Physicians. Unfortunately, his medical qualification was all that distinguished him from previous keepers. In 1632, a royal commission found that he had been falsifying accounts and stealing donations while depriving his patients of food and basic comforts. Crook was dismissed in 1633, but his influence was long-lasting. His appointment reflected changing attitudes to treating the mentally ill. It was no longer felt to be a matter for lay people using traditional methods. From now on, the hospital would always be run by a medical officer with a team of medical staff.
More information about the Royal College of Physicians at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.asp(x?mark)uid=1686FC8B7A84-44CF-8458-3A54297101 and resource ID equals 19191.
Treatment in the community. It was only the handful of people living in the Bethlehem who received any sort of institutional care in the 16th and early 17th centuries. In a population of 5 million, this meant that large numbers of mentally ill people lived in their communities, usually cared for by their family. Some were on the streets. Mentally ill beggars were nicknamed Tom O'Bedlams. In the eyes of the law, mentally ill people lacked the capacity to reason, so a court of wards would hand the responsibility for their affairs to someone else. King James I, 1603-1625, instructed the court that lunatics be freely committed to their best and nearest friends, that can receive no benefit by their death. The care of the mentally ill was essentially a domestic matter, and on the whole, it seems that people were not exploited by the system. Wide range of practitioners. Mental illness could be seen as both a natural and a supernatural event, a sickness or something caused by devils or astronomical events. People had no difficulty accepting both these explanations at the same time. Most could not afford to pay a physician or surgeon, but Tudor England had a vibrant medical marketplace from which illness, including mental illness, could be treated. There was an array of other practitioners, bone setters, wise women, cunning men, herbalists, astrologers, who offered treatments. Richard Napier. Richard Napier was a clergyman, medical practitioner, and astrologer who treated thousands of patients worried about their mental health between 1597 and 1634. Servants, beggars, butchers, university dons, lawyers, and nobility flocked to his practice in the hamlet of Great Linford in Buckinghamshire. Their symptoms included suicidal thoughts and self-harm, refusal to pray, inability to feel pious, sexual urges, visions, weeping, too much talk, and hatred of spouse. Using religious, psychological, astrological, and traditional healing remedies, Napier treated them all using a wide range of treatments. Responses to mental illness at this time included everything from listening and humane intervention to incarceration in a building or ill treatment. Marriage, work, family, and war, the daily life of people with disabilities in the 16th and 17th centuries. This section describes how many disabled people living in their communities in the 16th and 17th centuries worked, married, and raised children, though some were cared for by families or the parish, and some disabled soldiers and sailors received pensions. An unusual wedding. When Thomas Speller married Sarah Earle in St. Botolph, Aldgate, London, in 1618, it was an unusual occasion. Thomas, a blacksmith, was a dumb person, and he indicated his willingness to marry Sarah by making the best signs he could to show that he was willing to be married. Once the Lord Chief Justice had decreed that marriages could take place without the vows being spoken by one of the parties, Thomas and Sarah could marry. Theirs was the first known English wedding conducted in sign language.
More information about St. Botolph, Aldgate, at https://historicengland.org.uk/listing/the-list/list-entry/135-9143.
Lichfield's deaf hero. Another deaf man made his mark on history 25 years later. As the Civil War reached Lichfield in Staffordshire in 1643, John Dyot, nicknamed Dumb Dyot, was a soldier with the Royalist forces defending the town against Oliver Cromwell's army. From the battlements of the central cathedral spire, Dyot fired a bullet and killed Lord Brooke, commanding officer of the parliamentary army. Dyot was led back into Lichfield to a hero's welcome from the townspeople.
More information about Lichfield at https://www.heritagegateway.org.uk/gateway/results_single.asp(x)?marq(id=6B22827(3AE4)-BB34-DA875D62E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)-D8752E4D4)
In the crowded and unhealthy cities of Elizabethan England, conditions that resulted in disability were very common. The city of Norwich carried out a census of the poor in 1570, gathering information about the lives of 1,400 of the poorest people in the city. Among them were 63 disabled men and women with lameness or crookedness of the arms or legs, missing limbs, blindness or deafness.
Lameness, early English term, meaning restricted use of one or more limbs. Applied to restricted use of arms as well as legs. Crookedness, an early English term to describe people seen as misshapen in their bodily form.
Work and family. Their lives were surprising. Although poor, many were in work, the women were spinners or knitters, while some of the lame men were laborers. William Mordew, a blind baker, was still working at the age of 70, aided by his young wife Helen. Almost all the disabled men and most of the disabled women were married to non-disabled people and many had children. Their marriages were stable and long-lasting, even though two disabled women were identified as harlots. Although they were often poor, disabled people were very much part of work and family life and they lived at the heart of their communities. People with learning disabilities. People we would recognize today as having learning disabilities also lived in their communities rather than in institutions. Known as natural fools, innocents, or idiots, they were expected to stay with their families and work if possible. If the families were struggling because of ill health or extreme poverty, they might receive assistance from the parish. When Alice Stock became old and lame in the parish of St. Botolph, Bishopsgate, London, she received sixpence a fortnight to care for her foolish girl, Martha. If family care broke down or parents died, keepers or nurses in the local community would be paid to care for people. John Shusock of Wapping, London, was paid 2 shillings and 6 pence a week from 1649 to 1653 to keep the innocent Thomas Walker and given extra payments for his clothing and other necessaries.
More information about St. Botolph, Bishopsgate at https://historicengland.org.uk/listing/the-list/the-list-entry/106-4747.
Disabled soldiers and seamen. Attitudes to disabled soldiers changed over this period. Horrified at the sight of wounded men left to die on the streets, senior officers agitated for hospitals, sick pay and pensions for soldiers who were discharged from the army with disabilities. A small hospital for maimed soldiers was founded in Berkshire in 1599, preceding many grander efforts in Chelsea, Greenwich and elsewhere in the later 17th century. In Elizabeth's reign, laws were passed to provide pensions for soldiers and sailors who had lost their limbs or disabled their bodies. In 1590, the Chatham Chest was established to pay pensions to disabled seamen. It has been described as the world's first occupational health scheme.
More information about Chatham Chest at https://thedockyard.co.uk/top-10-collections-chatham-chest.